I think this is almost the only reward. Because some people say, you know, when you write what you think and when you speak up, you lose a lot. Yes, you lose. Because I was fired from my job, I went to prison, etc. But then the reward is great. Because when I come here and I listen to what you say about me, sometimes I think you are speaking about somebody else, not me. But then I recognize it's me. They are speaking about me, and I did that. In fact, I don't feel I did that. But I think this is the only reward I have, and it's a big reward. And this encouragement, this support, keeps me going on and on. And that's what we need. We need this solidarity. In this hall, for instance, we are different. I am Egyptian, you are American. I am from a Muslim background, you are from Christian or Jewish or Hindu or Buddhist. But we are one. We belong to humanity. We speak almost the same language. We hate lies. We love honesty, sincerity, freedom, justice, equality. So what's the problem with our world? What's the problem? Why millions of people are suffering and starving in Africa, in Asia, in our world, in the Arab world, the most rich region of oil and resources? Millions of children are dying of starvation. People are in prison. People are unhappy. Even here, I've met a lot of poor people here, starving and not eating in Washington, in Seattle, in New York, slummy areas in New York, like Egypt. So what's happening in the world? What's wrong? There is something wrong. And that's why I would like to start from here. Because, in fact, in the last few days, I was listening to the media here, to the radio, and hearing George Bush and Condoleezza Rice and all that. And I was very unhappy. Even food tasted bad. Even food tasted bad. Everything looked ugly. And I was not starving. I'm all right. I'm teaching here. I am a professor. I'm not starving. But still, I was starving. I felt I am something lacking in my life. And I think everybody feels that way when they listen to George Bush or to Condoleezza Rice, or to see what's happening in Palestine or in Iraq or in Egypt. I was really humiliated just yesterday when somebody showed me the newspaper and they told me, you know, Mubarak, he is going to change the constitution. I said, well, that's good news. Because we've been almost 1 year fighting to change the constitution in Egypt, and we were collecting signatures, and we were demonstrating in the streets. So under this internal pressure by Egyptian men and women, he started to change. But then I read the newspaper, and then I discovered that they said that Mubarak changed because of the pressure of George Bush and Condoleezza Rice. So I said, this is a new imperialist way. So they do not deprive us of our oil and resources. They deprive us also of our efforts, of our dignity, that we cannot even do anything. We are helpless. We cannot do anything. And everything comes from George Bush. And Egypt takes, and I read also, Egypt takes a big foreign aid, American aid from the U.S. This is humiliating. I'll tell you about the aid. The aid that comes to Egypt go back to the U.S. through, you know, unequal economic relationships and colonial neo-colonial powers. So, in fact, the aid goes back. So it's not aid. It's a myth. There is nothing called aid. But we are deceived. We are deceived all the time. We are living all these lies. So usually I say the aid deprives us of two things, of our dignity And our resources too, because under the aid we lose a lot of money. And so the money goes, many people think that the money goes from the worst world to the so-called third world. This is not true. It's the opposite. In fact, money and resources go from Africa, Asia, Latin America to the first world. And that's colonialism, and that's capitalism. But they give us the idea that we are having aid from the U.S. So we lose our dignity and we lose our resources. Well, that's, I'm just opening my heart to you, but I would like to speak tonight about creativity, dissidents, and women. And I would like to say a little bit about words, because we are deceived by language. When we say dissidents, some people think it's very negative. Like when we say insurgents, for instance, when George Bush speak about the resistance in Iraq and say the insurgents or the terrorists, these are words that does not describe reality, the truth. Because dissidence is positive, insurgence is positive because it's resistance. Resistance is a human right. When you are occupied, when you have foreign occupation, when you are oppressed, men or women, when you feel injustices and you do not rebel and you do not resist, this is inhuman. You are more human when you resist. So resistance is part of humanity. It is a human right. Resistance is an essential human right. But they name it people who do not want us to resist. People who want to occupy us and want us to submit and be silent, they describe our resistance, our dissidence, in a very negative way. They say we are eccentric, we are extremists, we are terrorists, which is not true. So we have really to unveil this language. We have to undo and demystify these words, because we are not colonized economically only. We are colonized by language, and we have to change the language so that we understand what's happening to us. So one of the also points I would like to speak about language is that is very, very common in the academia, the word post-colonial. They call me a post-colonial writer. I am not a post-colonial. There is nothing called post-colonial. Because post-colonial means that colonialism is finished. We are post-colonial. We are in the neo-colonial period, not the post-colonial. So we have to correct that. We have to omit the word post-colonial. Also the word Middle East, we have to omit it totally. What's the Middle East? Where it is? Where is the Middle East? Middle to whom? You know, so I am from Egypt, from North Africa. I am not from the Middle East. We were named by our by the British colonizers. We were middle to London. Now when I go to London, I say I'm going to the Middle West. When I come here, I say I'm coming to the Far West. You laugh. Why you are laughing? Because it's ridiculous. But when they name me, when they say about us Middle East, you don't laugh. You know, you see the difference? This is a very big difference, that we are robbed of our real name, of our real identity, of our real culture, of our real resources. I'm speaking English. This is not my language. I write in Arabic. I speak Arabic. I dream in Arabic, but I have to speak in English. So we are dominated by language, by military power, by economic power, by lies, by the media. And we have to come out of that together. That's why this is important, that we come together. We are not third world. Third world is very humiliating to us. We are one world. There is nothing called first, second, third. We are one world. We belong to each other. We have to celebrate our similarities more than our differences. We are very similar. You are similar to me. I am similar to you. What's the difference? and we have to struggle together. Also, there are words that we have to go to our language and to study and to see what are the words that we should omit, like Middle East, Third World, post-colonial. There is a big list, but I don't remember it now. Now we come to creativity, dissidents, and women. Also, creativity is understood in a very strange way. Some people think that writers and creative people are genius people and they are inspired by some divine power, etc. I don't believe in that, and this is not true. We are all born creative, all. Men and women, black and white, Americans, Egyptians, we are all. Humanity is full of creativity. We are born creative. But we lose our creativity by the way we are educated, by the way we are brought up, by the way we are conditioned, by the way we are socialized, by the system, by class oppression, by patriarchal oppression, by the state oppression, and then by global oppression, and by the academia. In fact, we lose our creativity in the academia. And usually when I teach creativity to my students in the first meeting, I tell them, I cannot teach creativity. What I can do is help you to undo what education did to you. You know, exactly. I have to liberate them of what they injected in their heads. I give an example of myself. I studied in the medical college. And, you know, the medical education is in Egypt. We inherited it from the British. It's not. And here, I visited many medical colleges here. It's wrong. The way we are educated and the way we become physicians is wrong. We become very good physicians, technicians. We may know about the spleen, the liver, the intestines, etc. But we are ignorant of the human being, of the society, of the world. And that's why you see a lot of physicians unaware of what's happening. They don't know why there is war. They don't know why people are poor. And how come you become a good doctor if you don't know why people are poor? Because, you know, when poverty creates 90% of the diseases in the world. So if you don't know the real cause of diseases, how can you be a good doctor? From here, the connection between politics and medicine. Everything is political. There is nothing that is not political. Because some people say, ask me, you are a medical doctor, why do you speak about politics? You are a novelist. Or why do you speak? What's the relationship between literature and politics? Everything is political. This water is political because there are millions of people who do not have clean water. There is no money, or there is money, but it goes to the military and it doesn't go to health. So this is political. The water is political. Oppression of women is political. Sexual oppression is political. Whenever you have two persons in any room, even in the bedroom, there is politics. At least who will be above, who will be below, you know. There is some politics here. There is some power. There is domination. So everything is political, and we have to connect. Creativity is related to connection. The ability to connect politics to economics, to literature, to religion, to sociology, to sexuality, to culture, to everything. And that's why our education does not help us to create. Because we have what we call fragmented knowledge. You know, we put here, our brain is divided and the knowledge we take is so fragmented and there is no integration and connection between different domains in life, and that's why we don't see what's happening in the world. And we gain a lot of money and we become very successful doctors or engineers, but really, and we marry and we have children and die and nothing happens. We have to change that. Yes, we pay a price for creativity. There is a price for creativity. a very, very big price. You may land in prison. But, you know, I'll tell you something. Prison is not bad at all. I'll tell you, because we are afraid of prison because we think it's unknown, you know. Before I went to prison, I was very afraid. I said, oh, how can I survive? But when I went, I survived, I came out, I said, okay, I can go again easily. No problem. So we are afraid of what we don't know. And when we know it, we are not afraid of it. And we are born in fear. And we live in fear and we die in fear. Because that's how we are brought up. When I was a child, the first word I heard about God is God will put me in fire. God will burn me. I was very young. I didn't make any sins. But I was considered a sinner when I was a child. And I had to pray and I had to ask God to forgive me or he will put me in hell. So I was afraid of God. And you cannot have fear and love in one heart. So I didn't love God because I was afraid of him. So you see how we are brought up in fear. And this is happening in every culture. In Christianity, in Islam, in Judaism, in Hinduism, this hellfire, this severe punishment. So I am very much against this fear. And whenever you have fear, you cannot create. Because creativity means innovation, means you bring something new, means you challenge the old, then many people will be angry with you. So you have to challenge. If you are afraid, you will not be able to challenge. I would like also I have to go to my notes, but I was really moved by your introduction. So I'll go to my notes for a while. But you have to tell me about the time, because I promised Dr. Masoud that I will speak only 40 minutes and will give you 40 minutes for discussion and questions. How many minutes I've been talking? I would like to speak a little bit about our association, because it was closed down by the government in Egypt in 1991 because we stood against the Gulf War. And it's not open up till now. But we work, we function, not at the local level, but we have the International Pan-Arab Association, and we function globally and pan-Arably, and also in Egypt, and we are having our 7th international conference in Cairo next May 2005. So, and we have two main objectives in this association: unveiling of the mind and organization. Because we discovered as women, and by the way, we have 35% men, because we look to feminism in a different way, and we see that feminism does not mean that we work with women alone. We work with men and women. And we have to change the mentality of men and women together and fight together. So we have 35% women. And we have men. And we have these two objectives. Number one, unveiling of the mind. And this is related to creativity and knowledge. Creativity is related to knowledge, memory, and unveiling the mind. Why we do not create? Why only few people create? And many people feel they are unable to create because the mind is veiled. Veiled by what? You can be a professor in a university, but the mind is veiled because the way we are educated, the media, the misconceptions, the paradoxes, we are blind. When we are blind to paradoxes, we cannot understand. We cannot create. Creativity means to be very sensitive to paradoxes. So from where this veil comes, and it's invisible. When we see a woman that is veiled, an Islamic woman that is veiled, we say, oh, she is veiled, and we sympathize with her. But when we see a man or a woman that the brain is veiled, we cannot see it. The veil is invisible. So we think they are free, but they are not free. And that's the problem with many people in relation to creativity. So our main objective in our association to unveil the mind, to re-educate ourselves. How to re-educate ourselves? How to undo what happened to us? By these connections, we have to study history. If you study medicine, why don't you study history? I have to go to history. Feminism, in order to understand feminism, we have to reread history in a creative way. For instance, I'll give example from our history. In ancient Egypt, we had female goddesses. We didn't have one male sky god, as happened in the three monotheistic religions. Before Judaism, before Christianity, before Islam, we had female goddesses in Egypt, like India, like many other countries in ancient civilizations. So when we studied our ancient civilization and we discovered our female goddess Isis, she was the goddess of wisdom, of head, of the brain. She was not the goddess of fertility, as happened after that. And her mother Nut, she was the goddess of sky. Nut, and her husband, the husband of Nut, was Jip, the god of earth. So what happened in history, that women, with the evolution of the class patriarchal system or the slave system, women who were goddess of sky went down and became goddess of earth and represented fertility and earth and reproduction, etc. And the male became the god of sky. He was the god of earth. He became the god of sky. And then the female goddesses disappeared totally in history. And they started to symbolize Satan, the devil, Eve, the sinner, as in Judaism. And that's how we inherited all that, through the political economic system, through the slave system, through the class patriarchal system, which was reflected in the three monotheistic religions. And now we have only one male sky, and the female goddess disappeared. So that's how we have to connect the past to the present, to the future. We have to reread history, to reread religions, to reread anthropology and medicine in order to understand why women were oppressed, why slaves were oppressed, why the black people were oppressed, why we have colonialism up till now. Because we are still living in a slave system, because it is a class patriarchal system. But it's postmodern, I call it a postmodern slave system. It is. It's the same, almost the same oppression, but it's more subtle. And it's more fierce. It's very fierce. And if you follow just what's happening, you know, it became a very, very fierce society. So we have to, then our objective is unveiling the brain, and then number two, to organize. Why, with all these demonstrations all over the world against the war happened? Because we are not organized. We don't have political power. We demonstrate and then we go home. There is no continuity. We have to this struggle should continue in an organization. The military is organized. If the military is not organized, they will never win. They are very organized. So when a group is organized, they become powerful. So that's why we were closed down by the government, in fact, because our two goals were very, very creative and radical, to unveil the mind and to organize. Women, you know, I would like to speak a little bit, few minutes, about how women, even by scientists, were inhibited and we're not encouraged to be creative intellectually. I'll give just example of Sigmund Freud. Sigmund Freud thought, though he was a genius man, but in relation to women, he couldn't understand their creativity. He said women can create biologically, but not intellectually. Women can create babies, but not ideas. You know, and there are many, many people in the world up till today, they think they are deans and presidents of universities here in the U.S. You read about that. And they think that women, their mind is less, they cannot be very effective scientifically as men. They can create in art, they can create babies, but not in science or philosophy or religion or something like that. And this is wrong. This is very wrong. This idea of Sigmund Freud is wrong, and we have to change it, because women can create intellectually and biologically and physically and mentally and everything the same, and men can create. So there is no differences, in fact, between what we call biology and psychology. And this also, I have, in fact, many points here, but I will keep some for the discussion. I would like to elaborate 2 minutes, and then I will finish, about this split between the body, the mind, and the spirit. And this affects creativity. Creativity means that you integrate between your body, your spirit, and your mind, and you are a whole. When you divide yourself into body and spirit and mind, you diminish your power of creativity. Creativity means that you are a whole. When I speak to you now, I am speaking with my body, with my spirit, and with my mind. There is nothing called spirituality or biology or, because there is a tendency here in the U.S., people going back to spirituality. Of course, they go back to religion, but they think that the word spirituality is more postmodern, you know. So they say we are going back to, they are organizing for spirituality. I can understand that many people are against what we call material life and money. I am against money and material life, but this does not mean that we separate between what we call material and spiritual, or to separate between what we call biological and psychological, etc. They are one. And women are oppressed because of this dichotomy, of this split. Women came in history to represent the body, the biology, the physical, and men represented the spiritual, the mental, etc., because they were created in the image of God. So we have to undo this dichotomy in order to be creative and to be one. There are many, many dichotomies that we have to undo. Sky and earth, we live in one universe. There is nothing called sky and earth. They are one. Divine and human, they are one. Male and female. Facts and fiction, there is no separation between facts and fiction. And anybody who would like to question me about that, we can elaborate. There is nothing called, there is no 100% facts, even in science. Up till now, there is some doubt, and we have to understand this doubt, because to doubt is very important, to question, to have doubt about everything, even sacred. And in science also, you have to doubt. There is nothing. There is nothing eternal. Everything is changing, and facts are changing. Theories in science are changing. You know. So we this separation between facts and fiction is not right. I write fiction, but also I can be a very scientific medical doctor, and you know. But you have to bring this together. We can talk about that. We have to bring the self and the other together. I will end by this, because there is a sort of philosophy here of individualism, that I think about myself. Creativity means to abolish the line between the self and the other. And you feel the other exactly as if it's you. It's like in love. Creativity is when you create something or when you are in, it's an ecstasy, exactly like love, because you dissolve in your creative work. You become one with your creative work. It's like becoming one with your lover. So the self and the there is no separation at all between the self and the other. And this brings the best of the human being. It brings humanity. Creativity is related to humanity and to become a better human beings, because we feel the others and we fight together for freedom, equality, and love. And thank you very much. Why we write? That's a good question. Maybe you would like to answer. Come. Maybe you know the answer.
No.
You don't know? Who would like to answer? Why we write? Any writers here? Why we write? In fact, when I was a child, I was writing. The first letter I wrote in my life, I wrote it to God. I went to my, because I had a brother who was older than me, 1 year older than me, and they gave him more food than me, and he was lazy in school, he failed, and I was the top of the school, and I was working at home, so I felt that this is very unfair. So I told my father, why do you do that? They said, that's what God said. So, because he's a boy and girl, and you are a girl, etc. So I went to my room and I cried, and then I wrote a letter to God. The first letter I wrote to God, I told him, you are supposed to be just. So why you are unjust with me and my brother? And I wrote this letter to God. And then, of course, I burned the letter. I was afraid. But that's why I wrote. We write because we feel injustice. We write because we are looking for freedom. We write because we are hoping, we are dreaming of a better life. Maybe there are other... We write also because we enjoy writing. There is pleasure in writing, in the process itself, like painting, like music, like anything. So anybody who would like to add to what I said? Yes, come here.
I'll just say it loudly. For me, writing and painting or producing art is an integration of body, mind, and spirit, for me personally.
Very good, very good. I agree. When I write, I forget even myself. You live, there is something that is really strange. It's not like when you are doing something else. When you paint or you listen to a beautiful piece of music or any art, then something happens to you, something changes. Maybe this integration between the spirit, the body, and the mind, and also the surroundings. You become one with the whole world, with the cosmos. It's like when you walk and then you look at sunset and you feel you are part of the whole world.
I heard you on KPFK this morning.
You heard what?
On KPFK, the radio station 90.7. I wondered if you could elaborate more on the lack of an alternative media. Because that's how I heard about you tonight. So maybe you can give us some pointers about what we can do and how we can get out the word better.
Yes. Well, at least here, in fact, since I came on the 15th of January, so I am almost 1 month and half every day, because I was looking for something to listen, radio, television. I never opened the television. But I opened this radio, Democracy Now! And KPFK, and I became addicted to it. In fact, I have to listen to it at least 1 hour every day so that I feel relaxed, because I see people speaking my language. But when I look to the other, to the mainstream media, I become nervous. I become like that, and I see George Bush, for instance, or hear him, I want to throw a stone at the radio or something, and I become nervous, and I talk to myself, etc., because I feel that I am hearing lies all the time. But when I hear KPFK, I am relaxed a little bit. So this is an alternative media. We have to create alternative media, radio, television, newspapers, magazines. Even we have to create alternative education system, because the media is an education system. We have to create different schools, different universities, in which people become creative, so that the education system encourages us to create, not to kill our creativity. You are lucky here because you started an alternative media. We don't have any radio or television except owned by the government. I am censored. I cannot speak on the Egyptian television or the radio or the big newspapers. I can write in the opposition small newspapers. But here you have some alternative media, but it's not enough. And that's the role of us. In fact, we need to be active a little bit. I noticed here, meeting the students, I've been teaching in the U.S. almost 14 years ago, and I feel that the students here are not organized, they are not active. They can go to a demonstration, you know, on the weekend or something, but they are not organized, they don't do alternative media. So there must be more action in this regard, because we cannot stop the war except by that. And that's why the war is continuing, because people are not organized, there is no alternative media, and many of the people, they just listen to the mainstream media.
How can you run for president of Egypt?
How? Well, like Mubarak. The question, I think anybody, this will bring us to a big question. Why the president? Why not every one of you can be a president? You think that a president is more intelligent than a professor in university? Or more intelligent than a writer, or even an engineer, or even a peasant? A peasant sometimes is more intelligent than a president because he knows his work. You know, so what I would like to say that we must have this confidence and trust in of the self that we can be anything we want. And I am running the president not because I want to be a president. I think a writer or a novelist is more important than a president or a painter or a musician. But I am running to challenge the system and to say we have to challenge the system. Though our winning may be impossible, but we have to do it.
My question actually sort of fits into what you're talking about. And my question, simply stated, has to do with men, revolutions, and history. And specifically in terms of the second objective of your association, organizing, and how if you look back in history and you see revolutions organized and led by men, and how that's problematic, you can feed into its own hierarchy, its own misogynistic structure, and where you see our future in some ways, where you see that leading.
Okay. Well, that's why, thank you, Jill, when you introduced me and said that I said, usually I repeat this phrase, I'm not tired of that, that women are going to liberate themselves, peasants are going to liberate themselves, men are going to liberate. Nobody replace anybody to liberate the other. Everybody is going to liberate. You have to liberate yourself first. I cannot liberate other women if I am not liberated myself. We have a proverb in Egypt, we say, فَقَدِ الشِّيْءِ لَا يُعْطِيهِ. How can you translate that, Dr. Russell? فَقَدِ الشِّيْءِ لَا يُعْطِيهِ. When you don't have something, you cannot give it. If I don't have money, I cannot give it to you. If I don't have confidence in myself, I cannot give it to you. So if I am not free myself, if I don't have freedom, I cannot teach you how to be free, you know. So what I, in my answer to that man, yes, men are organizing, because men in history, they were political. Women were not political. Women were social. And I am against the split between politics and sociology, or between what's political and what's social. Everything is political and everything is social. And women should organize politically. You know, I will go back to Egypt because I organized what they called a social organization. We are not allowed as women to have a political party in Egypt, because I wanted to organize a political party in Egypt, and the law of Egypt does not permit women to have a political party. They allow us to have a social organization only. And that's why I started our social organization. But we were political, and that's why they closed us. They closed us, and you know, one of the reasons why they closed it, they said, because you are political and you are a social organization and you should not work in political matters. I said, what's the difference? And that's why they closed us. So very important that women should organize politically and not socially and not charity. I am very much against the word charity or welfare, etc. We have to be politically active. And we have to integrate economics with politics, with our area, with medicine or health, or anything we are working, and we have to continue this struggle. Without that, we will do nothing.
Especially in Egypt and the political situation that's going on there, and there's a huge divide between the men and the women, the men not letting the women have their own political party. So what do you think needs to happen in order, because you talk about feminism in your terms as incorporating men, where here at Scripps we talk a lot of it is just being about women in a discourse with women. And so how do you include these men that are against what you were wanting to do in your organization for revolution?
I know it is difficult. I know it is. I'll tell you, I know it is difficult when we included men. First of all, men started to play with women, you know, and to have affairs with them, and I had a lot of problems. I said, okay, we have to dismiss men out, etc. So we had a lot, but we survived. You have to teach men. We have to, because in patriarchy, you know, men are not very much against patriarchy because they are not going to lose much. They benefit a lot from patriarchy. So why should they change? But we suffer under patriarchy, so we have to change. So in fact, we have to educate men. And that's why we include men in our association, to educate them. And they were educated. In fact, they were educated and they became very, very anti-patriarchal. So that's how. It's a process, and it needs a lot of patience.
I wanted to ask one question about the comment that Sigmund Freud made. Now, I'm a student of psychology, so I'm saturated in this discourse in which the split between self and other is taken a step further, and that other is just eliminated altogether, and all you have is the self. Mm-hmm. So I'm wondering if you can expand a little bit on your comment about Sigmund Freud and how he divided women and their ways of knowing as being creators just biologically.
Yes.
And perhaps can you give me a reference that I can look at?
Yes. Okay. Well, it's a long story, but I will make it very short. How many minutes we have?
5 minutes?
At the very most.
Five at the very most. So in 1 minute. Freud believed in what he called the super ego. You know, and he thought that women ego, super ego is less. That women are not, and maybe some, because he was treating some sick women in Vienna, etc. But he, in fact, his problem was that his patients, his female patients, were product of the class patriarchal system. And he was not aware of that. So he treated them as if this is the natural way, nature of women, not the product of the social economic system.
I see fear as something very primal and basic.
You know,
fear. Uh-huh. And it's like about survival. Mm-hmm. But fear is ruling us mm-hmm. in the world right now. Mm-hmm. How can we use fear and our fear as something positive?
Very good question. Well, good. So I think
now we use this one. thank you for this. How can we use fear so that instead that this fear destroy us from inside, we destroy the people who oppress us. True?
Yes.
It's like anger. You know, why women are smiling? That's why, though I smile, but I am against smiling all the time. You have to be angry sometimes. I am very, very, sometimes you cannot see me if I am angry. You know, I'm very angry sometimes. So we, our anger and our fear, we shouldn't direct anger and fear to inside here because it destroys us. It causes depression, mental problems, and weakness, etc. But when we bring this fear out, when we bring this anger out and express it, that's why creativity is very important, because creativity encourages you to bring your fear, you write your fears on paper. The minute you write your fears on paper, you get rid of it. The minute you paint your fears or your anger, you get rid of it. But when you inhibit your fear and you inhibit your anger, it comes into your self, into your heart, into your body, and destroys you, and it's a power against you. But when you bring it out, express it out, it becomes a power outside you, against, and you direct it in a correct way. Here comes the unveiling of the mind, the awareness. So instead of directing your anger to your friend and not to your enemy, you have to know who is your enemy. You have to make a correct diagnosis, what I call a correct political diagnosis. It's more serious and more difficult than medical diagnosis, you know, because you have to understand many things to know who is the real terrorist, not the children of Palestine or the people resisting in Iraq. So you have to make correct diagnosis and to bring the fear and anger out. Thank you very much. Thank you very much.
This program was produced by the LA Sound Posse. You can download it for free at www.radioforall.net. That's radio, the digit 4, all.net. The LA Sound Posse records speeches and events dealing with social justice issues. We anti-copyright these recordings and share them via the internet, via community radio, and as CDs distributed through grassroots social justice groups, nonprofit organizations, committed individuals, and others. Our goal is to be part of the creation of a broad-based, participatory, and democratic civic media in support of the creation of a truly democratic society. You can reach us on the web at www.lasoundposse.org. If you valued what you heard in this program, please feel free to copy and distribute it to others who you think would benefit from hearing it, thus becoming yourself part of a decentralized, democratic civic media. Thanks very much for listening.